Welcome to Black People Love Paramore, a podcast where I explore the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel seen. Please rate us and write us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Y'all already know, 5 stars only, because we are what? 5-star bitches or D.O. Gotti. If you're watching this on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, all that jazz. I am your host, Sequoia, and today joining me to chat about the deeply troubling film, 13. You might have seen her name floating around as she's produced Max Fun's Fanti, We See Each Other, the podcast, and now your very own Black People Love Paramore podcast. Welcome writer, comedian, producer, and co-host of the Cool Aunties podcast, Palmira Muniz.
Hey, thanks for having me, Sequoia. I love you.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming on. I'm so excited that we're finally able to do this.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be good. Twin in them.
We out here, okay?
Yeah. I'm excited.
Before we dive into the movie, we have In My Defense. In My Defense is a segment where we bring one of our unpopular opinions and defend it for you all. I was just telling Palmira before we started, I don't have an In My Defense. Y'all already know. So, Palmira, you carry in this one. What you got for the people?
So, upon rewatching Barbie... I can like say right now that I didn't think it was all that. Beautiful gowns.
Hey, and I feel that because I watched it once, and when I left the theater, I think somebody asked me to rate it out of 10. I gave it like a 7.5. Mm. And upon rewatching things, I generally drop the rating. So like I would imagine if I did watch it again, I would it would probably have a similar reaction to me.
Yeah.
Same thing happened to me. Ooh, I'm about to, please, y'all, please understand that I actually love this movie. But upon watching it the second time, I was like, I see more flaws. It's happened a couple times. It happened with Black Panther. Yeah. And it happened with... Spider-Verse, Across the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
I love me some Miles Morales, I really do, but upon the second watch, I was like, I mean, it was solid. Second watch gave me a 7. First watch gave me an 8.5, so.
That's how I'm feeling about Jordan Peele's Us right now as well. I rewatched it recently, and I'm like, wait, this part don't make sense. Where did he get these clothes? Like, what, you didn't like Us? Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, obsessed. Oh, wait, no, I did I like Us. I did like bit. Us, but lightly.
Okay.
I liked Us lightly. I didn't like, what was the one after that with the sheets flying in the air?
Nope.
That one I didn't like off rip. I said nope off rip. I don't understand. I'm not here.
I thought Us, when it first came out, I was obsessed. I was dick riding absolutely, and I had to like, it was like a comfort film. I had to watch it a million times. I just needed it in my veins, right? And I think it's because it was so unique in a way, even though like we mm-hmm. like everybody, if you're a horror person like, or a movie person, like, you know, all the like homages that and all the references and stuff like that. Like, it's kind of like mm-hmm. a horror Barbie in that way that, like, you know, you just know this comes from other movies. But I think I was so distracted by all of that and how fine, like, you know, Duke, what's his name? Winston Duke,
who
right?
is the lead of that? Well, Winston Duke, Lupita, yes. Winston Lupita, Duke is the lead, yes.
Yeah,
Lupita and Winston.
Yeah. Her performance was just like out of this world, right? And I think I was just blinded by that, and it just was so good. But then, like I said, like I watched it, like, you know, with the rose colored lenses like off, and I was just like,
yeah,
what's this about? You know what I mean? And
nah, that's super fair.
Yeah. So, but that's how I felt about Barbie in the sense that, like, you know, it did have a lot of Ken. It had so much Ken. Call it Ken. Like, just, you know what I mean? Like, it had so much Ken. And I feel like it wasn't, like, Barbie changed, like, initially, of course. But, like, I feel like I don't really feel like she found herself. Or I just mm-hmm. wasn't sure. Everybody else was, like, so concrete. And, like, Barbie was still, like... in a liminal space, like in a transition that I, mm-hmm. by the end, like she just gained a vagina and that was it. And I just wasn't.
Oof. Damn. All she did was get the vag and that was it. Nothing
and
else.
That was it. And
still nothing between the ears. That's crazy.
Yeah. I just felt like, you know, and then the speech, I love America Ferrera. I grew up with watching her and like, you know, Gotta Kick It Up and like, you know, she's, oh. yeah, Si se puede. Okay.
Si se puede.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. I was there. Moment,
but yes. I yes. was there. Yes.
But
and likewise.
Yeah. You know, so I'm happy for her and her, like, now in her career, and she's doing the damn thing. But yeah, the speech was just like really like snooze fest. It wasn't really saying much, even for like general audiences. And I just, beautiful gowns, and that was it.
I agree. I remember having notes on the speech exiting the movie theater. Mm-hmm. Like that was an outstanding thing that I felt like needed notes.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was like, they needed to, I don't know who needed to give notes on this, but like, the speech was lackluster.
It really was.
They didn't say enough. They really could have kicked it up a notch. Got to kick it up. They really could have kicked it up.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I agree. I do agree with that.
Yeah. It could have used some, I don't know, spoken word or something. You know, it just.
Something, you know, give it. Give it. Give it something.
Yeah.
Give it. It was giving bland.
Yeah.
It was
like, yeah.
You thought this was spicy, but it was.
I feel like there was no point in the whole Mattel situation. Like, my boyfriend and I were arguing about it, and, like, on the podcast, I'm going to admit that he's right, but even though he's going to listen and hear, baby, right?
Don't tell me.
But yeah, I will never tell him to his face. But he is right, though. Like, there is no point of, they're just, like, chasing her to, like, confine her in a box, but they, like, don't really change anything else for her. Like, they don't fuck up anything else for her in like, mm-hmm. within the story. So I think it was just like to show off Will Ferrell, which, you know, who's going to complain about that? But
that's it. That was the whole point of the Mattel thing, was to show off Will Ferrell. Sure.
Yeah.
I like him as much as the next person.
But sure. Yeah. Alas, I give it a 6.5, a 7. I thought that was very fair. Generous of you. Yeah.
Yeah. 7.5 upon the initial watch. And I'm sure if I watch it again, it might slip. I might go ahead and run it to a 6.5 as well.
Yeah.
But I don't have plans to rewatch. It also didn't seem like something I needed to rewatch. Like, I watched it and it was like, great. Don't need to watch that again.
Yeah. Unless I'm like tripping. Yeah. Like on, you know, like shrooms or something because of the colors. But
right. Now, that might be a really fun high watch. Wait, maybe I will get high. Probably not on shrooms, because I got to be outside for shrooms. I can't sit and watch.
No, totally. I cannot sit and watch. Yeah, you should be outside for shrooms, for sure.
Definitely have to be outdoors. But maybe I will get high just on some regular weed and mm-hmm. watch Barbie. That might be a vibe. And maybe I'll like it more. Generally, when I'm high and I watch things, I hate it more.
Mm.
But something like that's really bright and colorful,
yeah.
Maybe I'll like it more. Maybe it'll be better. Okay, 13. Let's get into movie 13.
Yeah.
What we all came for. Trigger warning. Let's definitely give the trigger warning. There is a lot of sexual abuse. There's substance abuse. There is physical harm. Lots of stuff going on in this one. So listen at your own risk. We definitely will be addressing themes that are a little bit heavier than usual on this episode. But here's a little bit about the movie. From Wikipedia and put together by Palmyra, my wonderful producer, who you are listening to here in your ears. 13 was directed by Catherine Hardwick and written by Nikki Reed and Catherine Hardwick. The film is starring Evan Rachel Wood, Holly Hunter, and Nikki Reed. Loosely based on Reed's life from ages 12 to 13, the film plot follows Tracy, a seventh grade student in Los Angeles, who begins dabbling in substance abuse, sex, and crime after befriending a troubled classmate, Evie. The film took place on location in Los Angeles in 2002, largely shot with handheld cameras. That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
Though it received numerous favorable reviews from critics, 13 generated some controversy for its depiction of youth drug use, including inhalants, marijuana, LSD, alcohol, underage sexual behavior, and self-harm. Palmyra, I want to hear your initial thoughts. I know we've both seen 13 more than once.
Yeah.
This was my first time seeing it as an adult.
Okay. Okay.
I thought I had seen it more recently than I had.
Okay.
But I don't, upon watching it again, I was like,
whoa, what the fuck?
This is crazy.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah.
And so I watched this when I was 13 with my mom. And
I also watched it when I was 13. Yes.
And it was because I know we're a couple years apart. So it was still like floating around by the time it got to you when you were 13. So it mm-hmm. wasn't like a archived movie by that time. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, my initial thought was that it was more so I was watching, I felt like I was watching something I wasn't supposed to be watching. So I think that novelty of it, I was like, ooh, ah, right? And I was really enamored with Evan Rachel Wood to begin with. Like, I just feel like she's dope as fuck. She's a dope actress. Shout out to her. And I rewatched it 2 years ago for the first time since that time. And so it had been roughly 10, 12 years since I had watched it last. And like, I had to watch it twice because it triggered me the first time. Mm-hmm. So like because of how much of a time capsule it is, I like felt like taken back there. And I was like, whoa. And I just, I was just processing it all. And then I watched it again and could watch it as a movie and was like, damn, this is crazy. This is crazy. Mm-hmm. And you know how like some movies don't age well, or you're like, oh, we thought this was crazy, but it was. No, it's still crazy.
Yo,
it's still crazy.
It's still fucking nuts.
Yeah. The
film is still crazy.
It is.
This is something that I was going to say later, but I feel like now's a good time. 13 walked so Euphoria could run. 13 walked so the movie Cuties could run. Do you remember Cuties a few years ago?
I do. The French film.
The French film that like depicted young girls, you know, being young girls, more or less. And Euphoria and Cuties got a shit ton of blowback. Those movies are nothing. Euphoria is damn near nothing for 13. Yeah. 13 is wild.
It is wild.
13 is wild.
It is wild.
And I'm like, for this to have come out in 2003, I know this had to.
And have actual a child wrote the movie. Nikki Reed wrote the movie.
Nikki Reed, for those of y'all who don't know, Nikki Reed was in Twilight. I think she played Esme, I'm not mistaken.
The blonde.
She played one of the sisters. She played one of the sisters in Twilight. And she wrote this movie. She co-wrote this movie when she was 14 years old about her life between the ages of 12 and 13. What the fuck?
Right. Right. So she's still, so she's writing about things that happened to her as a child, still being a child, and writing this script with Catherine Hardwick.
Yes.
And Evan Rachel Wood is a child. They're both children. Everybody's a child playing these things in real life. These themes in real life.
I think Evan Rachel Wood was 16, if I'm not mistaken, when she was the lead of this film. Mm-hmm. And I think Nikki Reed was 14 when she wrote and also filmed this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy that it's based on a true story. That's just scary.
Yeah. The social services person in me that is like, why? What? Catherine Hardwick, let's talk. Why did you do this? You know,
right. But why? You didn't help.
Where did you find her? More importantly, you know,
what the fuck?
Yeah, I was also a child that wrote, you know, like stories and things at a very young age. So I get, you know what I mean? So we understand like the desire to be artistic and express ourselves that way. And I don't know. Now it gets kind of weird because there's like the help with an adult that is not related to this person that, you know how Hollywood can be very misleading. And I just feel like, I'm kind of looking back. I'm like, was everybody like, were these girls like taken advantage of low key? Was Nikki Reed taken advantage of low key? Because like, I've heard, interviews with her regretting now, right? This film. Yes, because it's created it's created schisms between her and her family because it's kind of like but family is like, how could you portray me in the way that I was? How could you portray me like, accurately?
How could you tell the world how I treated you?
How dare you tell the truth? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
on me. You gonna tell the truth on me?
How dare you? You know? And she told, I don't know if Nikki Reed told the truth, but she told a truth that even if it wasn't her in particular going through that kind of stuff, there were teenage girls going through that shit. There were
definitely
teenage girls doing shit like that.
Definitely.
Two of them are in this room.
Now, I will say, I was a very, very good kid. So when I watched this at 13, I was like, is this what some of my peers are experiencing?
Yeah.
I remember just thinking it was kind of, it was just dark again. Okay, I watched it at 13 because it was called 13.
Right.
I saw it for the first time on Lifetime. So I don't know if I saw like the made for TV version of this.
Yeah, you may have.
Or, you know, a little bit more tampered down, tamed version
of PG,
this.
The PG version.
You know, like, yeah, maybe even PG-13. But hey, the way that I did not realize that this was an R-rated film until I sat and watched it 2 days ago and said, oh, shit, this is like... So that tells me one of two things. One, either I saw the made-for-TV version, or two, I was so young and innocent that I couldn't even reckon with the real themes that I was watching to like see the severity of what was taking place.
Yeah.
I more so, like you said in the first place, felt like it was something that I wasn't supposed to be watching.
Yeah.
It was kind of like, ooh, like I'm watching this like... like, this is kind of voyeuristic. Like,
yeah,
I'm
watching voyeuristic,
this,
for sure.
You know, like, wow, I can't believe this is, like, how the bad girls, quote unquote, are living. And in my adult brain, I'm like, babe, these girls were really fucking neglected.
Yes.
This was severe, really neglected and abused as hell.
I kind of wrote down in the notes, and we could talk about it more later, but, like... I know everyone hates Evie. Da, 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 da. I feel so bad.
I feel so bad for her.
I feel bad that she feels that she needs to do all that shit.
I agree. And you know what? I was confused by Evie in this watch.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been confused by her before. I never hated her at any point.
They could never make me hate you, Evie.
You can never make me hate you, Evie,
she
ever.
Eats.
Okay. She eats. Okay.
Period.
Evie, I couldn't tell if she was only manipulative or if she was both, you know, if she was both victim. Earnest and manipulative, you know, I know that she's manipulative to some degree, but I'm like, also
like, where were the moments that you felt like, oh, I don't know.
Like when she is talking to Mel she's like, he hits me, Mel.
Oh, right. Right.
Because she wants to live there. Like, obviously, she's trying to get something, but you think she's lying? I don't know that she is. I really don't know that she's lying. She's trying to tell a fucking adult something that's really probably going on with her.
Yeah.
You know, here's this adult. Maybe she's not going about it, you know, the quote unquote right way because she's fucking 13. And she's probably trying to save her own life. She's probably fully in survival mode, trying to save her own fucking life. It's like, hey... he's hitting me. Or the portion where she, I don't remember who exactly she's talking to, but she, and this is a big trigger warning because this part really like unsettled the fuck out of my adult ears here.
Right.
She's like, my uncle put things inside of me and pushed me into a fire. And I'm like,
hello?
And at the, like, what the fuck? And y'all, and at the time, she's also trying to, I think she's trying to convince Mel that she needs to live with them or something of that sort.
Yeah.
And so again, it's like, but are y'all hearing what she's saying? You think she's fucking making that shit up?
I agree. So, if it's not the uncle, it's not the boyfriend, it's somebody. Somebody's
doing something. I don't really give a fuck.
Right. Who it is and what and da da da. Someone's doing something to this young lady. And she's asking for help.
She's calling out for help. And the only way that she seems to have learned how to get her way is through some level of manipulation, whether it is using her sexuality or something of the sort. Something that I wrote down that I feel like is really the overarching theme of this film that I took away, my biggest takeaway, is something that I will pay the closest fucking attention to when I am a mother. When teen girls are neglected or abused, they will often use their sexuality as power because it feels like the only form of power that they have over their fucking lives.
Yeah.
That is... You know how fucking dangerous and terrifying that is?
Yeah. Or they see their parents, because it can be the mother or the father that they see doing mm-hmm. that, and mm-hmm. they emulate that. They don't even know what it is. They don't even know what they're emulating, but they know, they see it from the people around them. Not to say
100%.
I just have so many mixed feelings about Evie and just like her her personhood and like her mm-hmm. her victimhood, because like she's a child, she's a woman. I'm assuming she's Latina. You know,
she was definitely supposed to be in this film.
Yeah,
and when we checked in on it, that is a purely white woman. Well, and that's crazy as fuck to me.
There can be white. There could be German. That's true. Latina. Yeah, so
right.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's very true. Yes.
The way they try to sell it is like her using bendeja, which I thought was hilarious. But I you know, she's a marginalized person. She's in a, you know, mm-hmm. she's in a protected group. She's a child. And like, I want to save her. I want to help her. And everyone in the movie thinks that like she corrupted Tracy, right? Mm. And I feel like although Evie lied, manipulated, da da da, that is who she was at that time. Mm-hmm. She was mm-hmm. honest about who she was. She did those things,
mm-hmm.
and she was good. She was doing those things. And I feel like Tracy was the one that was like lying about who she was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like she was trying to like possess Evie's life. And she's the only one that's really lying to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like I couldn't really lean into like Evie being the villain in that. You know what I mean? Like she's responding. Yep. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like she's responding to mm-hmm. the abuse that she's going through. She's bound to using her sexuality as survival because she's definitely watched her aunt do it. She probably watched her mom do it. She's probably watched tons of women do it because they, you know, because they've had to, and it's all survival. It's not because, you know, it's because we want to and this and that, you know what I mean? Like it's all to like get things that we want, because life is not providing in any other way. And so I don't know, like, I just really feel for the kid. Even then I thought Evie was just really cool and they just didn't understand her. But, you know, I'm just like, damn, I, you know, this wasn't a real kid, but it is a real kid. You know, there's tons of, mm-hmm. of young women who are forced to use whatever, you know, like, prepubescent sexuality that they have in order to get any sort of attention, any sort of love. It makes me sad. You know what I mean? Like it just
100% right.
I think that's why that I was really triggered by that movie, because like I, you know, I witnessed it, went through it, still witness it with young women today. And it's just like, it's, but then like the movie, right? You know, people like make young women like one-dimensional characters and like spend their time like criticizing, right? Spend their time like just vilifying these young girls, and just instead of like the bigger picture that they need help, you know. And I think that's what people miss. I think that's what people still miss from 13. And then, but like at the same time, like 13 kind of pisses me off, because we have like Tracy, who's like this white impressionable girl who is now getting corrupted by all these black and brown people.
That was a big note. Definitely, you know what I mean? That I obviously didn't catch before. You know what I mean? And her means of, and I want to say rightful rebellion, because again, she's also a victim here. Tracy and Evie are both victims, obviously, in this film.
Mm-hmm.
And her means of rebellion due to her parents' issues.
Mm.
She, which is something that white women in particular tend to do, uses black and brown people because black and brown people are considered like counterculture or
right,
you know, some like sub, like a subculture, a subgenre
right,
of culture that is the opposite of whiteness, whiteness being seen as pristine or clean or whatever, trying to use black and brown people being portrayed as the opposite of pristine and clean.
Right. Right, and wholesome.
To get the attention of her parents who are fucking neglecting her.
Right. And what does that sound like? It sounds like all those, like, white boy, like, those white boys who hung out with rappers and you know, listen to black music to represent, you know, no shade to Miley Cyrus, but, you know, her 23.
very Miley 23. Very yeah, bangers era Miley yeah, Cyrus. Yes.
You know what I mean? Just, like, it's their way of, like, fuck you, mom, when punk music is right there.
But, yeah, no, the film overall is just, like, so bleak and disturbing. And it starts yeah, off in a way where you're like, oh, this is going to be, like, a typical a teen rebelling and, like, kind of going through, you know, something that, like, all teens experience. They're experiencing things not all teens experience.
Right.
They're
right,
being abused outright. Right. And neglected. And neglected. Outright. And neglected outright. And every single time you think that the film's not going to take it any further than this, it fucking does. Mm-hmm. Every single time I'm like, okay, like it can't go further.
It can't get worse. And it does.
It fucking gets worse.
It does. It does.
And I'm like, shit. And oh my God, the artistic note that I really loved is the fact that it gets bluer as yes, the film goes yes, on.
Yeah. So apparently, because I've obsessed about this movie for the last 15 years, so same. I've done a lot of, you know what I mean? We've done a lot of reading. Apparently it was, you know, the clearest day, right? Like, wholesome, like, in the beginning to represent, like, you know, Tracy and her family, that they're doing okay. And then the more it gets darker and there's, like, a mixture of, like, cool colors, the yellows, oranges, and reds during, like, those really intense scenes, like, when Tracy is, you know, self-harming. And when her mom and her are fighting, like, you know, you have those alarm colors, right? And then, like, there's a green.
Wow.
When they're on Melrose, like, there's, like, the green hue. And I feel like that's, like, sick. Like, yuck. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when her brother walks in and sees her with the thong, which was fucking human. I would have walked into the ocean.
Disturbing. Like, y'all, okay, for y'all who have not seen it, there's a scene where Tracy is obviously, you know, like, gone off the deep end of her transformation into Evie in her head. And she has on these very low-rise jeans and this thong that's visible a la Manny from Degrassi.
The queen.
And she's, like, at some type of shop, and she's talking to the man behind the shop. You know, and so her back, the camera is to her back. Her brother walks in and just sees ass and a thong. Sees ass and a thong. So he says something, he like, damn, I don't all that ass or something, you know. Him and his friends like, damn, all that ass. She turned around. It's his sister.
Mm-hmm.
She turned around, it's her brother.
Mm-hmm.
I would have perished right
passed
then and
away.
There. Die. I can die. I don't have to. I don't have to do this anymore. I can
no,
go.
Yeah.
Actually, take me off the planet. Yeah. I've had enough.
Yeah. And all the boys were just like they were just like checking out his sister, just being gross. And he's fucking mortified. She's fucking mortified. And then like and then now she leaves the store and like tries to find her friend. Her friend is busy fucking around with that little biracial Javi.
With her man. She's busy. Evie is busy fucking around with Tracy's man in the dressing room. That biracial boy, Javi.
He's so.
And this Wabi.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, we'll get to Hobby. Hobby, you up next, sir. Okay. I don't want this whole episode to be super heavy. Palmer,
yes.
Do you have any other heavier thoughts before we get into
just one thing on Holly Hunter? Girl, like, just not worst mother of the year. You know what I mean? Like, let's not do too much on her. But I feel like the whole movie is about avoidance and, like, avoidance and chasing. Like, the, you know, Evie and Tracy are chasing womanhood, right? They're avoiding childhood and chasing womanhood, and just, like, they want to be grown. They want to be grown because of the agency you have as a grown person. And, like, Brooke and Mel are, like, chasing accountability. They're avoiding accountability. You know what I mean? They're like, avoiding raising their girls. Like, they're avoiding raising their girls. They're avoiding real life. Because, you know, Mel wants to be seen as a good... She's letting motherfuckers stay at her house for free. She's doing haircuts for free. And...
Mel, get up. You somebody's mom, Mel. Come on, get up.
Yeah. And, you know, and Brooke is an actress. So, you know, or rather, she's vain and an actress. Those are separate entities.
I don't know what the hell Brooke does. I was confused.
You know what? That's fair.
You know, fair. I was like, that's fair. Why? What's the chicken cutlets in the wig? Well, I don't understand what's going on.
Well, she was a bartender as well.
Oh, okay. So her night, like her additional job. Yeah, got it. Was a bartender.
Yeah. So it's just like all these like women who just don't want to be their own fucking age. Just like clashing, you know what I mean? And I...
Wow. Don't want to be their own fucking age. That is so true.
So I just feel like it, like with Mel, I feel like she should have known better. I sympathize, but I don't empathize. She should have, I feel like she really should have fucking been there for Tracy. She should have been, she should have put her foot down. She was like, she was coddling everybody else, and Tracy had to take care of everybody. She was everybody's mother.
Wow, I wholeheartedly agree with everything you just said. Like, Mel deciding that because she felt like she had lost some control of Tracy, that she was going to try to be closer to their age, and she was going to start more dressing like them. Like, when they went to the movies, when Mel, Evie, Tracy, and Mel's man, we'll get to him later on too, went to the movies, Mel is dressed exactly like Evie and Tracy. And this is coming off of a scene where she's like saying that Tracy's out of control and that she's scared and this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Why was that your next course of action? To try to become their age instead of trying to become the fucking parent that you had yet to be, show up as. You put your kids through enough. Your man keeps having...
Smoking crack in front of your kids.
Smoking crack in front of the fucking kids and having to go to rehab and then halfway houses, or maybe jail in a halfway house. I don't really know which one he was going to. And then you keep bringing this man that has caused them so much trauma back into their world when their worlds are probably just starting to mellow out from the last episode with that man. Mm-hmm. You bring him back again to serve your own selfish purposes because you want to feel loved and this is who you feel connected with. You're not making the best decisions for the unit. You're making the best decisions for you. And your child is feeling that, responding to that. And now you're scared of your child. And instead of becoming the parent that you never have become, you become more of a child.
Yeah.
Be fucking for real, Mel. This is a good time to talk about the best and worst characters. We're going to talk about that after.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of TripleClick.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
This short break. Get going on your New Year's resolutions with Factor. Factor's ready-to-eat meal delivery gets rid of the hassle of meal planning and sets you up to achieve your goals this new year. Skip the grocery stores, prep work, and cooking fatigue. Instead, get chef-made, dietitian-approved meals sent directly to your door. With more than 35 meals to choose from every week, including keto, calorie smart, vegan and veggie options, and more, plus over 55 weekly add-ons, you'll have tons of nutritious and tasty options to jumpstart your resolutions. Looking for a meal for a special occasion? Gourmet Plus is the perfect remedy if you're looking for quick, high-end options done easily. When life gets chaotic, Factor is flexible. You can change your meal plan from 4 to 18 meals per week or pause or reschedule your deliveries whenever. Head to factormeals.com/blacklovemusic50 and use code blacklovemusic50 to get 50% off. That's code BLACKLOVEMUSIC50 at factormeals.com/BLACKLOVEMUSIC50 to get 50% off. And we're back. Best and worst characters.
Okay.
For this, you have, okay, Palmyra has listed as options the mom. Mom is Mel. Mm-hmm. The brother, Tracy, Evie, Javi. The mom's boyfriend, the mom's mooching best friend, mm-hmm. the dad, or Vanessa Hudgens standing on business, period.
Yeah.
Now, I really feel like Mel is a bad mom, of course, but who I think is the worst fucking character is the dad, because nigga, where the fuck are you? Where the fuck are you?
Taking care of his other family. He's taking care of his other family.
Taking care of your other goddamn family while your two fucking children mm-hmm. and your ex, I don't know, your ex, mm-hmm. flounders and struggles by her fucking self mm-hmm. with these two children, mm-hmm. a crackhead person yeah. who she fucks with.
Yeah.
And on top of that, she's an ex-addict. Yeah. Because on the phone, she talks about having a sponsor.
And he might be too.
You know what? That's true. He might be too. But where the fuck are you? Yeah. I hate the dad so bad.
He's a villain too. He's a villain too.
He's
his absence. Zero stars.
While we see
his absence. His absence is omnipresent.
It's so loud. It is omnipresent. His absence is so loud. As at least while I disagree with almost every fucking choice Mel made, at least she was trying to fucking parent.
Right.
Pops, on the other hand,
couldn't give a fuck less. Couldn't give a fuck less
about his fucking kids.
Yeah.
That made me so angry, yeah. deeply resentful.
Yeah.
Deeply resentful.
That moment is when, because for a little bit I was just kind of like, okay, the brother's there. He's there to fill in space, right? But I felt mm-hmm. for him when, you know, he just finished talking to Tracy. He just kind of showed up, was like, be good, and then left. And, like, he walks up to his son, and he tries to do the whole, oh, you know, we're going to catch the waves and this and that. And the thing about, like, divorced parents is that they fail to realize that their children are more emotionally mature than they are. They have to be.
Definitely.
Because they have to cater to their own feelings. And on top mm-hmm. of that, have to cater to y'all's feelings because yeah. to their parents' feelings. Let me not, you know, get triggered over mm-hmm. here. But because the thing is with separated parents or divorced parents or parents who are just not together, it's a lot, you know, as a child, you're lying a lot because everybody's lying to you. So, you know, like, so the dad's like, oh, we'll go surfing. And his son is like, yeah, Dad, yeah, we'll do that. Knowing damn well that's not going to happen. Knowing damn well he's lying. His dad is lying. He's lying. Everybody's lying. Everybody's yeah. lying. So
yeah.
it's just like, as a child of like separated parents, like you just have, you have like a special knowledge now that whatever your parents say, is not true. Like, it's not, you know what I mean? Like, you're now there, and now there is those trust issues. Now he has trust issues now too. You know, like, his was just more quiet. His traumas, I feel like, or he's a little bit more quiet. That could be an oldest child thing. And I feel like for younger, you know, I know, you know what I mean? Like, I know we want to, you know, gender children and boys are like this and girls are like this, but I feel like we really need to pay attention to order, like raising order of children. And as the older
and the socialization aspect. Yeah, like, absolutely. Boys are quote unquote like this because they are socialized to be like that, not just because they're naturally like that.
Right, exactly. And you know, so he's a little bit more quiet about it because he has to take care of his sister. And Tracy is more out of whack about it because it affects her more because she's the girl child. So it's like, just very textbook dysfunctional family. And all that to say is the father is, he's the villain, actually. He's the villain.
If we're picking a villain, it's that man. And he can choke.
Count your fucking days.
Hate it.
Yeah.
Zero stars. Now, the best character, if I had to choose a best character, obviously it's Vanessa Hudgens standing on business, but if I had to choose somebody other than Vanessa, honestly, I might be going with Evie.
Same.
I might say it's good old Eve. Evie is herself the whole time, like you said.
Yeah.
She's in survival mode. Evie is an adultified child.
Yes.
A parentified child.
Yes.
She has to take care of her own well-being. She is trying to do so in the probably healthiest way she can. She keeps trying to seek out an adult. She keeps going to Mel. She's trying to live there. She's trying to get herself, you know, an okay situation. When Tracy's throwing little fits about things, you know, when Mel's like, Tracy, what do you want me to get you from the grocery store? And Tracy's like, blah, blah. And Evie's like, I like everything you get, Mel. You know, I think while she is kind of, again, being a little bit manipulative in that, I think she means that shit. She's like, I'm just happy that some groceries will be in the goddamn house. And somebody, you know, an adult is being an adult.
Yeah.
Going to the grocery store and getting me some food and I don't have to figure it
Agreed.
Out.
Agreed. She's like, care? Love? Bitch, I love it. I love it.
Is this?
Even there was even a part.
Is this love?
There was even a part where, do you remember where Tracy made the pants with the leopard print?
Yeah.
And then, you know, so Mel made these pants, the leopard pants that Tracy wanted so bad, but they were like $75. And Tracy is like talking shit on them. And then the next morning, you see Evie in those pants.
Oh my God. Yes. Evie was in the pants.
The costuming in this movie.
Yeah.
They did a solid job with like storytelling and that.
And that is just like so touching. Like, I feel like at her core, Evie really is a really good person.
Yeah, I think so too.
Like, I feel like she's a really good person. She's thoughtful, which I think allows her to be a little bit more manipulative because she is like perceptive and thoughtful empathetic. Mm-hmm. So she can like kind of read the room and like understand, you know, how somebody might be feeling and therefore use that to her advantage, right. Which is, again, somebody in survival mode. You kind of have to do that type of stuff.
Right.
But yeah, her even being excited about the pants. I remember when Mel brought the leopard print pants that she had sewn because she couldn't afford the $75 ones that Tracy wanted from Melrose. So she went and sewed some leopard fur on some pants that she already owned. And Evie was like, these are dope, Mel. Like, these are really dope. I didn't notice that she put them on, but she's like, I don't know what the fuck is wrong with this bitch, but this feels like
she
love.
She always had her own opinion. And Tracy was just going with what Evie was saying. But Evie was always like standing on her own. I feel like she's also the best character for me too. The worst being Javi, but Evie.
Not Javi.
No, Javi's the worst fucking character. Fuck Javi, okay?
What Javi do?
No, it's just the beatboxing. And the freestyle.
Oh, that was, I want to gag. I
so corny. So incredibly, so just light skin behavior. And
it was such light skin behavior. I said,
I was just so.
Get this biracial menace off of my screen.
I was just like, if you don't shut the fuck up, but you know, whatever. But he's a child. And maybe I was just really triggered by him because I'm just like, oh, you're so fucking embarrassing. But anyway, so Javi being the worst, but Evie is the best. because her outfits ate every time. She
ate every fucking time. The original Manuela Santos.
Okay. She was an individual, a misguided individual who needed a lot of help and a lot of love. Mm-hmm. But she was an individual. She was that girl. Mm-hmm. She was, and Tracy mm-hmm. knew it.
And she was confident. At least yes. she postured confidence in the way that had me believing it on the schoolyard. I said, ooh, okay, hold on. Miss Ma'am got her shoulders back. She's not looking around at what the other girl, she said, I don't give a fuck what you bitches think. Right. And she probably didn't, because she probably been through enough. She probably like, I actually don't give a fuck about what you little bitches think. I have bigger fish to fry. I need to survive out here. I don't care.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah. She's had to, I think that's what a lot of people underestimated about her too, is that she's a survivor. So yeah, mm-hmm. she did discard Tracy when she was done with her, and that was mm-hmm. fucked up for sure. Mm-hmm. That is narcissistic behavior, but like, that's just another day in the life. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. Evie knows she's gonna have to move on. She did.
I also got the sense that she was embarrassed when she discarded Tracy. Mm. Like, I got the sense that she felt, okay, so I think what happened was Mel went over to Brooks. What happened before she discarded Tracy? What happened before she didn't answer the phone?
That whole movie theater fiasco.
The movie theater fiasco happened. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. I feel like she broke down at some point in that. She has like some type of like emotional moment.
Yeah. When she was just crying like in that little corner.
Yeah, she's crying in that mm. corner. And I think she was embarrassed that she had such a emotional human moment. Mm-hmm. And she was like,
never again.
I can't be seen by this person again. This person saw too much. Mm-hmm. So she has to fucking go. Mm-hmm. Is the sense that I got.
Yeah.
In addition to her feeling like Tracy was no longer of use to her, of course. But again, that's the dynamic of Evie. She's such a complex person mm-hmm. that it's really difficult to be like, oh, she's the villain.
Right. Like, or to, yeah, to call she's her a narcissist. Really yeah, to call her a narcissist altogether. It, you know, she's participating in narcissistic behavior. But again, she's a child.
Definitely.
And yes, she's a child. She's just repeating what she's seen other adults do around her and how other adults treat her. Brooke could give a fuck less exactly. if that bitch was dead or alive.
Brooke ain't hear from Tracy, Evie, Mel for weeks at a time. Didn't give a rat's ass what the hell was going on with them girls. She said, Mel's problem, not mine. I'm out here trying to get to it.
She said, a mom okay. is momming, and I'm going to let her mom.
Hey. And she said, like Evie keep telling y'all, I'm not her mom. Right. I'm her cousin. So, Mel, big okay, mama,
the,
you got
the
it.
The cousin's the baby. The cousin's the baby.
Right. She said, I don't have it in me. She said, I'm not a mom. I don't have it in
right.
me.
Right.
And felt, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Which phrases would you keep/leave behind from the film? I'm going to list some of the most iconic ones. Thank you, Palmyra, for putting this together. Ghetto booty. No panties, no bra. No panties, no bra. It stinks in here, Mel. What the fuck did you do? Oh my God, Javi's beatboxing. Javi's freestyling on Hollywood Boulevard.
Oh my God.
And then I'm going to let you go ahead and read the last one.
Now you making me read this one. Nothing, Bendeja. He's your guy.
Period. Now.
Oh my God. If,
I'm getting rid of the ghetto booty one because I was like.
Yeah, because what the fuck does that mean, girl?
That was the only. For a movie that was made in 2003, it holds up really. It is surprisingly unproblematic in the way that many movies of that time frame are problematic. It is obviously controversial and very heavy, but there's no times when I'm like, nah.
I'm you offended know, and I'm triggered and
like yeah. exactly. Mm-hmm. There's no times when I'm offended. The only portion could possibly come when one of the girls walks past and Evie or Tracy, I can't remember who says it, says, when does she get a big ghetto booty? And the other one says she stuffs. Even that says to me that they think big booty is good because they're like, she stuffs. It's not real.
Right.
You
right,
know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so even then I'm like, meh. Yeah. You know, which is yeah. very different from 2003 was like the height of heroin chic movement.
Absolutely.
People were expected
absolutely.
To be stick skinny.
Yeah.
And that type of shit. And so them being like, oh, her butt's not real, it's stuffed, is like,
okay,
you know.
I'm not
super mad. Surprisingly unproblematic movie. Tell me which one you keeping, getting rid of? What's the vibe?
I think I'm gonna keep no bra, no panties. No bra, no panties. Because it was just such a puffing your chest out to her mom scenario that I just like, when daughters stand up to their mothers, I'm just like, I know that's right. Talk your shit. Mm, so, you know what I mean? So it was just like kind of her stepping up to her mom in a way. Definitely misguided, not, you know, like, girl, calm down. You know what I mean? But I think I just love like the scandalousness of it. It was just like, ooh, she talking shit to her mom. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think I keep that one. I'd fucking get rid of anything. I know Javi was just there as a vehicle, but I just that whole, yeah, just his artwork, I hated.
I absolutely feel that.
Yeah.
And the no bra, no panties line comes at like, it's like toward the end of the movie, definitely in the second half of the movie. By this point, Tracy, by the time that she's puffing her chest out to her mom and like in her mom's face saying that she has on no bra and no panties, like pretty much what the fuck are you gonna do about it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's responding to the fact that her mom hasn't noticed that she has a belly button piercing and a tongue piercing. You don't notice something on your child's face? She's had it
and
for
that shit was
weeks.
Big. And that shit was it was big.
Big. That, she's had it for weeks.
No, that's such a good point. That's just, I can't even talk because that was such a good point. Because no, you're so right. Because I didn't see it like that as her being like, hello, bitch. Hello.
Do you see me now, bitch? Hello.
I didn't see it like that. But yeah, she's challenging her. Like, I've been going through this shit. And have you even seen a piece of it? Because those piercings were so fuck. They were Christmas tree ornaments. That's how fucking big
like,
they were.
Like, they were huge. It was so fucking big. So she's like, yeah, not only do I have on no bra, no panties, look at this. Boom. Look at this. Mm-hmm. Boom. Mm-hmm. Tongue is pierced too.
Mm-hmm.
And where have you been? Negligent, per usual, behind that man. That's what you're doing. You worried about the wrong things.
Yes.
Get your head out the man's ass.
Yes. Yes. I'm going to go smoke some cigarettes now.
Like, how you not notice the smell of cigarette smoke of your own brand of cigarettes consistently being in the fucking house if I'm not seeing you smoke them? What the fuck is going on? You okay? There's a point in the movie where I don't even know Mel's boyfriend's name. I have no idea, I just know his
the actor's name is Jeremy Sisto, and he's never played a good guy in his whole career. That man has never played a good guy in his whole fucking career. No, if you see, no, tell me I'm wrong because I.
Nah. I believe you. I certainly believe you.
But Jeremy,
the portion
Jeremy
of the
system.
Movie where things didn't go as badly as I thought they were about to go. I was about to say I've never seen this fucking movie. I was so confused at this part when Jeremy just has a blow up where Tracy calls him like a crackhead or some shit.
Yeah, cokehead. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Cokehead. Mm-hmm. Which I mean, did she lie on you? Okay. So he's had enough at that moment. He walks out. He goes to Mel's room. He strips all her clothes off and puts her in the shower. Mm-hmm. And Mel kind of sits in the shower naked for a second. And she like comes to a realization and like rushes out the shower. I thought he was about to go in that room and do something to Tracy personally. And I was like, I actually about to wrap it up here. If this is where this is going, I'm turning it off.
Sure.
But he was leaving.
Yeah.
And he was leaving the house entirely because it was threatening his sobriety. When he returns shoeless, which tells me he has relapsed. He returns shoeless and shirtless with just an open, unbuttoned shirt. And a little toy that he's using to woo Mel back. God, Mel, you are so fucking easy. You getting wooed back by this little goddamn toy that he brings you. The nigga didn't disappear for God knows how long. I don't even know
he
how long
does not
off.
Have shoes
he's
on. Gone.
He don't have on you. Shoes. He's
he
walking.
Left you.
He left you. He walking down the street barefoot, outdoors, and left you in a dire crisis-ass situation in a time where you're talking about you can't do this. You're literally saying, I can't do this. I can't do this. And he leaves. Okay. It's not his kids. I understand.
Right.
Sure.
Right.
But is that really your man? Your man? Your man?
Right.
That's not your man.
That's not your man.
Let him go.
That's not your man. Mm-hmm.
He's the reason that she's acting like this right now, mm-hmm. anyways, and mm-hmm. you are just clawed in.
Mm-hmm.
Let him go.
Agreed. I but she's avoiding herself. She's running away from mm-hmm. herself too. You know what I mean? Like, she's so busy helping everybody else, which again is still not helpful. She's enabling everybody. And yes. that's like one of the biggest things in AA is enabling, right? And like yes. that's why I also think her husband, her ex-husband, or her baby daddy, her ex-baby daddy, was also an addict in some way, because of how how she's so easy to enable, like, other people mm-hmm. versus other people enabling her. So
that totally makes sense.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like he was the main drinker and she drank with him and then became, that's just random backstory. But like, I just feel like she's the enabler more than she's the alcoholic. You know what I mean? And So just her standing behind Jeremy Sisto and just like, still making the same mistake after we just finished seeing that it just did not fucking work for the 15th million time, yet we're still gonna do it again. Tracy never stood a chance. She really didn't.
Tracy never stood a chance. Poor God, the girls, it's tragic. It is mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. tragic. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the film, it seems as though Tracy like kind of comes to her senses or something. I don't know how she just magically comes to her senses.
After everything crashes and burns for her, you know, she has to get left back behind in the seventh grade, which is fucking
She's getting mortifying. Held back behind in the seventh grade because she's neglected her fucking schoolwork so much. Yes. Also, how does your mom not... The school didn't call and say, hey, your child is not turning in shit. Your child is not at school. Your child is not turning in shit. Your child's at risk of getting held back. How the fuck are you having a conversation with my 12-year-old telling her that she's about to get held back without me press? Every adult in the fucking movie needs jail. Every single adult, jail. I can't believe them.
Yeah.
And this is the adultification of teenage girls that we were talking about. This is exactly it. Why the fuck are you talking to this teenage girl like she's an adult? She's not. Mm-hmm. She's a child.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like there would have been so many letters going home, so many progress reports. She would have been on academic probation way before she would have flunked.
They would have had to have spoken to a parent by that point. They would have had a parent-teacher conference. If they couldn't get a hold of Tracy, they would have got a hold of, or if they couldn't get a hold of Mel, they would have got a hold of her dad. Somebody was going to know some goddamn thing before they went to Tracy and was like, hey, you're getting held back.
Right.
Now your fucking life is over. Your friends have moved on.
Right.
You're getting held back.
Right.
You done lost your other good friend, Vanessa Hudgens,
that was standing sticking beside you. Your neighbors, they don't want to talk to her.
They're scared. They're like, ooh.
Girl,
not the bad influence. We can't. Don't look over there.
She ruined her whole. She ruined. I know we want to blame Evie. She ruined her whole life.
She ruined it. She did.
You know what I'm saying? She ruined her whole life.
But I feel like in real life, what tends to happen is that spiral just continues.
Yeah.
But in this film, they portray it as though she wakes up one morning after she feels like her life has crashed and burned. Mind you, this is not even the worst thing that could have happened. Like, getting held mm-hmm. back in the seventh grade, yes, that is embarrassing. Mm-hmm. But
she could have gotten pregnant. She could have
from there. She could have gotten pregnant. She could be an addict. You know, she could be addicted to these little substances that she's been dabbling in.
Mm-hmm.
She could have gotten killed. She could have gotten severely assaulted. There was a couple times when I was like, are we about to see her get assaulted? Like, please.
No, it's not that kind of movie. It's still a very like trauma heavy movie. But no one's getting assaulted. Thank God. Because I don't think it would have been evergreen as it was if it had.
Right.
Because who the fuck wants to watch that?
Nobody wants to fucking watch that. But yeah, she wakes up the next morning. The blue filter is gone.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like she's clear-headed. She wakes up next to her mom, who has fallen asleep holding her child that she doesn't know what the fuck to do with at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And it implies that she's committed to doing better going forward. Which I'm happy that's the end of Tracy's story.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, that's where Tracy's story
leaves off.
Yeah, it starts to improve, is the implication. But I don't, that's not realistic It doesn't seem
realistic. And then, you know, it just kind of leaves off of, like, her in a park regaining her childhood again, I guess, what that's supposed to be. But you're right. It doesn't end there. And I think, it's not a happy ending. It's not a sad ending. I think it just ended. So.
Yes.
That was it. And that was it.
But woo, child, a film, especially in 2003. Oh, it also comes out the year before Mean Girls. Mean Girls comes out in 2004. Mm-hmm, and I feel like this is Mean Girls' evil sister, evil twin. I feel like this movie is Mean Girls' evil twin. Especially in the beginning, there's a lot of reference points where I'm like, oh, they use like, that in where Mean they Girls do the next year,
where
too.
They're walking down the hall and shit. Yeah.
They're walking down the hall in lockstep. They have that going on. One of the unpopular girls says, I heard Evie Zamora, blah, 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 you know, does X, Y, and Z thing.
They
use the same song that Mean Girls uses the following year, Overdrive by Katie Rose. I'm independent. Like, that same song is used as well. And I'm like, this is really, you know, on this is Mean Girls, evil twin.
But Tina Fey would never say she'll never say.
You know what I mean?
She'll never say.
Right.
No,
right.
It's definitely.
Of course not.
Definitely.
But I'm like, the references are here.
No. Because, and even down to the tone, or just like 13 is like the blueprint for a lot of like female rage movies, or just movies about female friendships that turn toxic. Like Megan, you know, Megan, the horror movie that came out about the doll.
Yeah.
It reminds me of 13 for some reason. Like, it was giving me 13 tease. Like, their relationship was very Tracy and Evie in a way. Just like the Tracy being like the real girl, wanting more, wanting this, wanting certain things. And then Evie, Megan, being the one to be the caretaker. And then Megan just kind of taking it further and was like, but I love Tracy back. She's Evie if Evie loved her back.
Wow. Oh, you know wait. I mean? Now, hold on. That's kind of, that's good. But you doing something. Come on, analysis. We doing something now.
What I mean? So, I just feel like there's a little bit of Tracy and Evie in every, like, movie that's about female rage and female friendship that gets fucked up. I just see them in everything now.
No, that totally makes sense. And I feel like a lot of women's rage does start around this time frame when you're going through puberty and you realize the world is seeing you differently. Not only do you feel differently, but the world is interacting with you differently. Now the world, you know, sees your sprouting breasts and, you know, your new hips and whatever. And you have all this responsibility that you didn't fucking ask for, that you don't see your brother having.
Right.
You know, you have all these eyes on you, all this fucking attention. And you're like, well, I might as well use it then. Right. I guess I see how you get there. You know, I see how you arrive there.
Absolutely.
Also, you had a really good point in the notes. You said, I wonder how much worse this would be if social media were a thing at that time. And this is such a good point. This would be so fucking bad. And there was a movie that came out on Lifetime. I don't know if it was a Lifetime movie again. I saw 13 on Lifetime too, so I spent a lot of time watching TV movie content on Lifetime.
Did your parents make you watch that to like be like, yes, be good, yes, bitch, be good, yes, be good?
Absolutely. My mom would tell me what movies to watch. My mom told me to watch 13. I don't think that she had seen it. I don't think that she, or she had maybe seen the Lifetime version of it as well. And so she didn't know how severe this shit really got. But she told me to watch 13. And there was also a movie that came on Lifetime called Cyber Bully. That starred Emily Osment, I believe.
Yes.
That kind of reminds me of like where 13 could have gone if it were also in the social media realm. Similar themes, teen rage, girl rage, you know, that type of thing. But also in social media.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Damn. Yeah. So, and I think, again, because of the lack of social media, like, you know, there was AIM at that time. Like, there was AOL, you know?
Yeah.
Because there's cell phones, there were chat rooms, you know? But I think without that, that's what, again, another reason why it's evergreen. You know what I mean? Like, it could still hold up as, like if, because if they dropped that movie this year, it would get the same, I feel like it would get similar responses of, like, you know, like of shock and of
definitely
disturbance and stuff like that. But it, you know, without that social media dating it a little bit, I feel like that's why it's been able to like carry on for so long. you know?
I wholeheartedly agree with that. And speaking of nostalgia and social media and the phones that were there, the nostalgia of it was also, that was the part that I was having a good time with. Because the movie is a heavy time.
Yeah.
You're in shock.
Yeah. And then you see Flip Phone, you're like, oh, cute.
You're like, oh, look at the little rhymes on the window, Flip Phone. Okay, look at the low rise hip huggers. Okay, she kind of eating that. I like it. Or you see old school Melrose. I live in LA.
Yeah.
And I see Melrose, you know, old school Melrose. I see I see LA high schools, LA middle schools. Mm-hmm. As someone who attended, they definitely look different than schools in other parts of the country. Mm-hmm. Schools in California kind of look like.
Yeah, no, SoCal, like if you went to school as in Southern California, especially during the early 2000s, like that's how it looked. And so it just made me made me miss the seventh grade. I was just like, damn, we were really doing that shit. We were really hanging out back there. You know what I mean? Like we were not smoking cigarettes. But but you know, we were just like acting up. And go ahead with the
yes. Also, I do remember the time frame when, like, in middle school when Girly started stealing at the mall and that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I didn't do it. I was not. I was really scary as a fucking child.
No,
I was always doing exactly what the fuck.
You were good.
I was a good girl. I was scary in like a good girl way. Like I was too scared to do shit.
But what option did you have? Could we get in trouble?
Very much.
Did we have the options to get in trouble?
Babe.
Okay.
I was gonna be toast, a goner. She was wrapped up. Like it was no way in hell. But yeah. I do remember the girlies like stealing, of course, like at the mall. And they do that in 13, of course. Tracy takes it further. And instead of just stealing some goddamn panties from the mall, like a decent human being stealing from a corporation, she steals from an innocent lady. She steals a wallet from an innocent lady at a bus stop to go and buy boxes of Skechers. Talk about a blast from the past. She goes to go buy boxes of Skechers. I love nostalgia as much as the next person. I don't remember Skechers ever being cool. Like, babe, you stole that lady's hard-earned cash to go buy some fucking Skechers. If I found out a teenager stole from me, one, we got a problem. But two, if I found out a teenager stole from me to go buy some Skechers, I'm lighting you up. I'm roasting you. You're getting roasted.
Right.
Very much, what are those? Yeah, I'm laughing at you. Yeah. I'm calling you a loser. All types of shit to your face.
I think Skechers was probably a sponsor at that time because that's the only reason. Because I'm like, Skechers was never that serious.
Like, it was never that serious.
Some Reeboks.
Like, you might as well have put on some light up shoes. Now, Reeboks were fucking serious.
I would understand.
Yeah. Fat Farm?
I would understand. Some baby fat. I understand.
Some Sean John, some Echoes. Yeah, no, it was serious. It was serious.
I understand. But Skechers? But some
Skechers? Dash shoes wasn't cool then, so I'm confused as to what was going on. But okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that was a sponsor.
But lots of nostalgia in the movie. If you do, I do very much suggest I watched it with my boyfriend who had never seen it. Mm-hmm. And I could tell that it like hooked his attention.
Yeah. My boyfriend had a lot of questions too.
Like, right. He was like,
where did daddy?
Like, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I think he kind of felt
bad for Evie too. Like, you know, he was just very like, I feel bad for these girls. Like, it's just like, you feel alarmed for them more than anything. You know?
I'm sure. And it probably like scares you. Like, I just imagine as like a man watching it who does not understand the full power of a teenage girl.
Yes. Yes.
It probably scares you a little bit for.
Yes. He didn't understand
potentially
it.
Having.
He didn't understand
a teenage
something.
Girl where it's like, you don't know how simply powerful a teenage girl really can fucking be.
Yeah. Yeah.
If she wants
in a bad way. I try to stay away from the whole like girls are bad, girl kids are bad, boy, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But I get what you mean though. I get that like just the persuasiveness, the vulnerability mixed in with like the brilliance of a woman right before, you know what I mean? And like you're an aged woman is so beautiful, but like you're the most beautiful you'll ever be. and you just discovered that, and you just discovered how stupid everybody
is. You're realizing how stupid everybody is, and how everybody's consuming you without your
permission. Yeah, without your permission. That's the primary thing.
Nothing in it for you. So you know what you do? You use that fucking sexuality. Mm-hmm. And that's something boy children don't have the experience of. And I don't
think they realize. And they see it as a privilege. They see it as a curse.
Definitely.
Instead of
and
a
like,
curse.
It's not. It is not. It is a curse. I did not ask for this shit. I remember I was an early developer. I got my period at like 10. I probably got like titties and ass and all that around 9-ish. And I remember being the only person who had it in my grade.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it just being such a topic of conversation constantly amongst adults, amongst boys, amongst girls, just everybody all the time. And I just felt like I did not have agency over
that. Yeah.
I didn't ask for this shit.
Yeah.
I'm being made into a consumable product. Like, y'all are treating me like a consumable product.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't go the route, you know, of... Oh, well, let me exploit y'all's dumbasses.
Yeah, yeah. And it's for different reasons. Like, I was a big, always been a bigger body person. And so when I was younger, I looked older. That's what I was told, right? Whatever that means. And I feel like a bigger children, you know, like our bodies are ogled at because they resemble... whatever the stupid justification that's used, right? And then you have like, and that's not even the truth, because little girls are also getting like, it's just girls are getting ogled. It doesn't matter what they look like. It doesn't matter what they're doing. It doesn't matter, you know, definitely. What I mean? Like, you and I look completely different. I'm sure we looked completely different as children, and we got the almost exact experience.
So exactly.
Neither of us leaned into it either. Like, I wore my dad's and my brother's like hand-me-downs, and everyone's like, how are you non-binary? And I'm just like, are you fucking dumb? you know, but like, I wore boys and men's clothes for much of my life. So like, extra not leaning into the shit, and it happened to me anyway. Whoa. So it happens to girls, or if you're socialized as girls.
Black girls. And brown girls.
It happens to us,
especially black and brown girls, which is why, again, I refuse to paint Evie as the villain of this, as, you know, somebody playing a Latina girl.
Yeah.
With at the beginning of the film, I think the brother says something like, oh, Evie Zamora really grew up this year.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't ask for this shit.
Mm-mm.
She didn't ask for this shit. I was like, over the summer, Evie really grew up. She didn't ask for this shit. But if she got it and she feels powerless,
she's gonna
use
it. And that's what she,
you know?
Yeah. And you motherfuckers are gonna eat it up every time.
So Tracy maybe ate it what up we should too. Talk about. Tracy. You know what? To me, it low key felt like, and this, I feel like this is like probably a more common dynamic. It low-key felt like Tracy's sexual awakening. Evie felt like Tracy's sexual awakening.
Absolutely.
Like, it felt like she wanted to be Evie, but she also kind of wanted to fuck Evie as well.
Absolutely.
Like, it felt like both that things were going on.
That kiss scene, I was like...
Yeah.
As another queer, you don't think we know those tricks? You know what I mean? Like, oh, I never kissed somebody before.
I've never kissed
anybody. I never did that before.
I didn't even feel that. I didn't even feel that. You know? Like,
come on.
I'm like, this is a sexual awakening. I know what the fuck I'm watching. I didn't see Teen Girls. I didn't been one. I did the whole stint. Okay.
Yeah.
Like,
She wanted to be her and be with her. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I think,
absolutely.
Yeah. What a well done, written by a fucking 14-year-old.
Yeah, shout out to Nikki Reed.
Piece
like, I know she may.
Shout out, Nikki.
I know she may feel differently about it now, but it's.
I know.
It belongs to the world now. You know?
Your art lives on. Like, I get it. I really get it. The art lives on. A fun fact that I found out about Nikki Reed as a former Twihard. Nikki is married to Ian Somerhalder, who also played a vampire on a different vampire show, Vampire Diaries. Ian Somerhalder was a vampire on Vampire Diaries. Nikki Reed was a vampire on Twilight, and they are married. And cute. I was a vampire girly, so I consume both of those things.
But I love that.
Shout out, Nikki. Yeah. You're really an icon. Like, truly, such a fucking icon. Ooh. If you have not seen this movie, I definitely suggest that you watch it. It holds up in 2023 and 2024 and beyond, I'm sure, real hard. Mm-hmm. And if you have seen it, let us know thoughts, of course. We want to hear from you. I think that's all I got. I don't know, girl. Premier, did you have anything else you want to chat about?
No, just thank you so much for having me on. You know, Cool Aunties comes back in February. We have a new host and new segments and new episodes. And tune in for that. And yeah, you can follow me on palmeramuniz.com, on Viva La Palma and everything. And yeah, keep it cute.
Thank you so much for coming on Palmera. This is a great episode. I forgot how much I liked this movie and how much I had to say about it.
Right.
And this was Palmera's suggestion, y'all, as well. And I was like, absolutely. I was like, yeah, that's really a good one. So I appreciate you coming on and chatting and lending your thoughts.
Thank you for having me.
This episode, of course. Per usual, you can find me at BPLPpod across all social media platforms. You can email me, love, hate mail, and all of that at blackpeopleloveparamore@gmail.com. And yeah, that's it. Bye, y'all.